Welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. It's the 30th of December 2011. And for our final show this year, I have on the line for the entire show Carla Cryer, who's been on the show before and who I've been talking with on Radio Skid Row a number of times. Carla is a psychologist and she's got a lot of experience in life and a lot of knowledge of the world. And of course, she organized the Creative Economy Conference, which was really interesting and brought out some really interesting speakers. And today I'm getting Carla on to kind of be my crystal ball gazer for 2012, and we're going to just try and see what we think is going to unfold for the following year. And during the course of that, we're also going to reflect on what happened in the previous year. And this is obviously just off the cuff, and we haven't done a massive amount of preparation for this, but I hope you'll find it at least interesting. And I'll now get on with it, and I'll welcome Carla to the show. Carla, are you there?
Yes, hello, Harrowood. I'm here.
Great. So, Carla, what do you see unfolding over the next 12 months?
What is staring us in the face as we're going into the new year is an incredible tense situation between Iran and America. The British have pulled their embassy out from Iran, and they have thrown the Iranians out of their embassy in London. They've been given 48 hours. I think some of that is now passed. And they've increased, America has increased the sanctions so that Iran is no longer able to sell its oil. And, you know, Iran has gotten to a point, I think, where they're saying that they're going to block transport from the Gulf, which means that the oil that is currently going out of the Gulf through the Strait of Hormuz, I'm not quite sure how you say that, is going to be completely blocked. So this is an incredible escalation of tension that we've witnessed over the last week, and we're going with that tension into the next year. So, you know, on the Reuters and so on, you hear that Israel may go it alone. I have a friend who's just recently visited Israel, and they are all fitting out their bunkers. They are absolutely intent and watching the news, watching the British respond to the demonstration outside the embassy in this incredibly belligerent tone, you know, indicating that it's a complete threat. One does feel that 2012 is likely or highly likely to move into the beginning of World War III. So those kinds of tensions have been, I think, gathering all the way through 2011, you know, increasing bit by bit, almost like a positioning that's going on.
Right.
The positioning, for example, when Obama came to Australia, there was a talk of past alliances in past wars. There was the, you know, coming out that they were going to be allies again in any problems that were going to come up. So there's the positioning of the bringing in the US and the in Darwin. So, you know, a very clear positioning is going on with, I guess, Iran, China, you know, who has both China and Russia have commercial contracts of oil with Iran.
Sure.
Like 30-year contracts, yeah. So what is then now going to happen when Iran, due to the sanctions, can no longer sell their oil? You know, it's like there's a deliberate provocation through the sanctions to Iran, hoping that Iran will do something that then will spark off the need for retaliation, or that's the momentum I perceive. Do you perceive that?
I think that is part of the plan that they've been trying to unfold for at least 5 years.
Yeah.
And however, what I've seen each year is that we are led to believe it's going to happen and then it doesn't happen. And that doesn't mean it won't happen this time. It may well actually happen this time. But I've seen it not happen so many times that it's a bit of a cry wolf type situation. And maybe that's been done deliberately to soften us up so that when it does happen, we won't even react to it. Maybe that is actually a psychological tactic that the military-industrial complex has actually adopted.
Sure. But when you look at 2011, I think there is a real preparation, that 2011 had a real preparation momentum going, and I think this time it is very, very intense, like I was just watching Hillary Clinton indicate that they have tried and tried to meet with Iran, you know, which is not in fact the case, and Iran has said they would be happy to meet with them anywhere. But no place has been given. But the attitude or the stance that Hillary Clinton, you know, had on these last speeches that I've heard from her is very, it has a very peculiar feeling to it of, right, we're going to run with it now. But I may be completely wrong. But to me, it's happening very, very fast.
And, of course, I will add to that the very disturbing news that came out from the Council for Foreign Affairs, the Council on Foreign Relations, which has a website, foreignaffairs.com, and they are incredibly influential, very powerful, sort of almost shadow government of the US, has put an article on their website titled "Time to Attack Iran."
Yeah,
and the article summary is available there. You actually have to pay to get in to read the entire thing, but the summary pretty much says it all. They're basically saying that it's the best thing to do, and they're saying, look, we know it's problematic. We know we might be starting World War III, but we'd rather start World War III than allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. That's just so terrible that we're actually going to destroy the whole world because we think that's better. I mean, you know, read between the lines, that's what they're saying.
It is an incredible position that is happening very fast. So China has warned them that they will, you know, that they will not sit by to watch Iran attacked. Putin has indicated, so they're aligned, you know, the positioning has happened in a sense, but on the other hand, in this last report, Hillary Clinton indicated that, they would try and manage to get oil for China from other places, yeah? So
yes.
In some sense, the sort of geopolitical strategy appears to be, like, still keep China aligned still and Russia aligned right now, and let's just deal with Iran first. You know, once we've got Iran wiped out, then we can, you know, see what's going to happen, you know, in our relationship with Russia and China. So what I'm saying is this year, 2012, it's almost like a nice edge of tensions coming to a head. Astrologically, by the way,
yeah,
I looked it up. This year, astrologically, for those readers who may find this informative, there's a Uranus square Pluto, which means that you have dramatic revolutionary change, major generational upheaval, ruthless, extreme, and transformative. So this is, you know, those who say who believe in astrology, this is the prediction of destruction and extreme upheaval through destruction. And it squares, Uranus squares Pluto 7 times in between 2012 and 2015. So June 26th is the first square, then September the 19th, the second square, and so on. I can read through the rest of them, May the 21st, November 21st, 2013, and so on. And this is quite an extraordinary event astrologically, and the last time it happened was in the early 1930s, over the period of Hitler's rise to power. And complete, you know, the extreme changes and revolutionary changes. And I was saying that on the other hand, beside this very tense political situation, you know, all the time bordering on the beginning of World War III, you've got worldwide the Occupy movement, which is still hanging in there. It's somewhat shifting and morphing forms. And you had that recent demonstration, well, the demonstration in the UK for the superannuation of super pensions, and then of was it million people? Do you remember?
Possibly, yeah. It may have been that much.
In the UK. And then you had the demonstration just recently in Russia of 150,000 is the number, or 90,000 is another number that's come forward against the Putin elections. And, you know, that's kind of it appears not so easy to figure out exactly what was going on there. But it appears as a desire for a change and a different kind of democracy, a sort of more participatory democracy, a demand that leaders listen, that leaders actually take note. And that appears to be happening worldwide, doesn't it? All through 2011.
Well, I don't know what to believe anymore about what is, you know, really going on. I feel, in a sense, that the media has become such an unreliable kind of vehicle or mirror for anything that's going on, that I don't know really. I'm sort of a bit, you know, bemused now, having seen so much disinformation, so much misinformation, so much spin on so many topics, and I've recently been overseas. I've been in Thailand for a couple of weeks, and you know, you look at the world from there, and none of this stuff that we're talking about even exists. It's not even in their news. They don't even talk about. They don't talk about Iran. They don't mention North Korea. You know, all these things that are somehow so important to us. And why are they even important to us? Why is Iran important? It's on the other side of the world. Why is North Korea on the news every day for the last 3 days? I can't even. It doesn't make any even sense, does it? I mean, those countries are not relevant to Australia, yet they're on the news all the time.
Well, apparently the oil prices are already skyrocketing, and they have already gone up to, I didn't write down the exact number, they've already, you know, they're already on the way up. So that's how it will affect us, and that's how it will become immediately visible to us.
We're going to have to wrap up this segment, Carla.
Yeah.
So that is extremely good, and I'll get right back into that after this short break. Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to the show. Today I have Carla Cryer on. Carla has been giving us her view of the impending year 2012, and we've been talking a lot about impending doom, with Iran being squarely in the sights, and of course the the withdrawal of diplomatic relations between Iran and the UK, the oil price skyrocketing, and of course we have Iranian and US warships facing each other off in the Straits of Hormuz. And of course we have the statement from the Iranians that if the Americans or the Israelis, or in fact anyone, launches an attack against Iran, the very first thing they will do is close the Straits of Hormuz, which of course will send oil prices stratospheric. So let's just get down to it, Carla. You think they're going to do it. When do you think they're going to do it?
It's at the moment it's still posturing, isn't it? It's
yeah.
still, you know, they've got their little boats out and they've got theirs lined up and, you know, Iran says if there's any more sanctions, we will do that. And then they say if you are going to do that, then we will do that. So at the moment it's still posturing, but it's increasing in intensity. And I would put my bet on it happening during 2012. It, you know, it won't initially affect us in, you know, in any more ways than, say, the Afghanistan war or the Iraqi war affected us initially. But it is very unlikely that China and Russia will now just stand there.
Right.
I mean, Putin has said, like when Gaddafi was taken out, he said, what right have they to do that? And then in his recent quest for that the elections were somehow rigged, he indicated then that a lot of money had been poured from the United States into that uprising, or that, you know, the people out there in the square.
Yes.
So there's beginning all the time now, there's beginning this posturing, you know, this warning where people are warning each other and aligning in their groupings, but the groupings are not completely sure yet. But as you say, it is almost impossible to grasp beyond the disinformation. And and it is like when you're looking up and you're trying to find out, yes, what are the contracts really between this country and that country? What are the military alliances? What are the economic alliances? All these things, one really has to search to get them.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I think just one can feel the increase in tension. You know, apart from the astrological prediction, I am aware that there is this increase in tension. And is this just another hype, as you were saying, it's been there before, or when is the real deal going to happen? So that's the negative thing that we're going to experience, but it's going to come to a head in 2012. I really believe it will, you know, apart from all the other 2012 predictions. You know, you've got numerous predictions for 2012 of the end of the world.
Yeah.
You've got numerous predictions for a complete change of consciousness. And it's very interesting because in this way it reflects Uranus square Pluto, you know?
Okay.
The Pluto bit is the destruction and the Uranus bit is this change in consciousness. So the two are properly linked, do you know?
I didn't know that.
I hope that these other movements like Occupy Wall Street, less demand by educated students and educated people who are getting together on the internet and are working together on the internet, that they can have some sort of impact here. What do you think?
I think it's quite possible that that may occur. I think that overall, over time, this has been happening. I think that since the birth of the World Wide Web, since the explosion of information on the internet, this type of thing has been occurring, and we just can't see it because we're in the middle of it. I have my doubts about the Occupy movement as a real... as actually the tip of the spear, if you'd like to think of it that way. I think that the Occupy movement has had some elements of validity to it, but I think it's also been heavily co-opted. And to the extent that it again has become so confusing that it does my head in to even try and speculate upon it.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that people like us, what we're doing right now, I think we're the tip of the spear. I think the conversations that we're having and the thousands of blogs and all the amazing alternative media that's being generated every day right now on the internet is the tip of the spear because it's creating a ferment in people's minds. And it may not be visible in the policies or in any change in what you might read in the newspaper, but when you speak to people in the street, when you get the vibe from what people think, you realize it has had an effect, because people are a lot more actually, you know, cluey and cynical about a lot of the things they're being told. Now, how will that translate? How will that translate into action? I mean, I tend to be very cynical about it. I tend to be very despondent about it because I see nothing happening. And we, you know, we all feel that way. But at the same time, the way social change occurs, it's not the way you think about it. It's not the way you imagine it's going to be. It doesn't always happen the way you think it's going to happen.
Yeah. And there is also going to, you know, what is happening, I agree with you. I mean, initially I was very deeply despondent because with the economics conference I was hoping to shift the critical mass to a certain point. Just in my little pond, I was hoping to shift the critical mass of awareness to a point where some effective action could be taken. I'm beginning to believe that that is not possible. That even with the million of people out there in the UK, you know, demonstrating around their pension, the response was nothing, basically. There was no response other than to say, well, you're living longer and you've just got to cop it sweet, you know. So also from the Occupy movement, there has been no really substantial active concessions coming down, you know, any kind of real concessions. And I don't think they are, in fact, going to happen, the real concessions at this point of time. But inwardly, as a psychologist, the process that people are beginning to put through is a very, very interesting process. You know, the initial process is denial, and then finally when you switch from denial to actually opening your eyes, the impact is shock, horror, and you want to do something, and then you begin to realize you don't know who to trust, yeah?
Absolutely.
So there's this absolute confusion of who to trust, what to trust, where to trust. And in that sense, if you know, that's a process that you often see in psychology as on a sort of personal level.
Sure.
In abusive situations or with dysfunctional families and so on. And ultimately, the outcome of it is that the person has to begin to stand alone. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
As sense, we have to grow up. You know, and I think there was a something I was watching on the YouTube last night where someone was pointing out, we as a whole world, we as a global world, have to grow up individually. We're going to have to grow up. We can't trust daddy. We can't trust mummy. We can't necessarily even think that we're not going to be betrayed by our friends even. I was reading Julian Assange's autobiography or his one that he didn't approve of.
Yeah,
it was very interesting because it goes from one betrayal to another betrayal to another betrayal to another betrayal. And he cannot comprehend that people do not see how important it all is. And
right.
I think maybe you would have had that experience. I certainly have had that experience where, you know, when, you know, bottom line, look, just getting on with my own life here right now is probably more important, you know.
Mm.
And as long as we all think that, as long as everyone in the world thinks, look, really, when the chips are down, I better just look after number one here, get my act together, make sure that I've got money, make sure that I've got what I want, because bottom line, pretty much that's what I want to do, or that's all I can see that I can be effective with. And as long as we think that, that will actually be true.
And also, but I'd also like to point out, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, is that that belief that people have is actually a flawed belief that they haven't actually looked at properly, because when they think to themselves that they're going to take care of number one, they're actually falling into a trap that was set for them.
Yes.
And if they really thought about it, and if they really thought about the consequences, I mean, let's just take, for example, the worst thing that most people can think of is defaulting on their mortgage, right?
Yes.
Because that actually is the thing that locks most people in to prevent them from doing the things that they might otherwise do, whether that's to just pursue their own creative interests, to join a protest movement, or just be themselves and say what they think. But we're just coming to another break. But I actually really want, in the next segment, to talk about the mortgage.
Yes.
And I want to talk about whether we think there's going to be a giant collapse, whether there's going to be a rash of mortgage foreclosures and an economic collapse. But I want to talk about the mortgage itself as a power, as a form of enslavement. Back yes. after the break.
Yes.
I hear a song by Marvin Gaye called What's Going On. Back to the show. Well, we have been talking about the future. We've been talking about the possible impending attack on Iran and some of the consequences that might flow from that. But as I was saying just before the break there, we've been talking about what it is that keeps people from being who they are. And, of course, Carla was saying that they have this belief that they have to take care of themselves, take care of number one, and then in doing so, they then push away all of those things that they think are less important. And I believe many people think that they are doing the right thing by their families, by their creed or whatever, to take care of themselves and their families and not engage with things that might be difficult, problematic, controversial. And one of the biggest things that people feel that they have to hold on to is this ownership of property, because they've invested so much in it. Most people have been encouraged to get a mortgage from a young age, and these days it's getting younger and younger. I mean, a lot of people these days in their early 20s have got a mortgage because it's actually quite easy to get. I mean, as soon as you've got a steady job, you go to the bank manager and there you go, bang, you got a mortgage. You know, you don't even have to have a deposit. Just here it is, here's all your money. And of course, the trap was set for them there, I think, Carla, wasn't it? The trap was set for them. They walked into it like naive little, you know, sheeple. They had no idea they were walking into a trap when they went and the friendly bank manager said, yeah, sure, I'll loan you all this money. It's actually, it locks you in from that point. And then anything that you might do that might disrupt the smooth flow of your income becomes something you think, well, I won't do that because I'm going to protect number one.
Yeah, you can't rock the boat. So it guarantees a sort of obedience at work because you don't want to lose your job because that rocks the boat.
Yeah.
You know, it guarantees a certain obedience to you don't want to you know, be seen as too loopy. Like if you get involved in political activity of various kinds, you know, the whole, you know, there's a whole clamping down because you don't want to rock the boat because your own house has become this sort of only little place of certainty in this vast changing world, because our world is changing at a huge, rapid pace, you know?
Yeah.
And in that rapidity, in that, you know, sort of ocean of change, what are you going to hang on to? And the idea that is somehow that if you have a house, you know, if you own a house, then somehow you can kind of bunker down in that house and you can kind of, you know, weather the storms, if you like. It's like your own little ship, you know.
But yeah, great analogy, yeah.
That little ship, that is the very thing that keeps you locked into obedience and that keeps the social structures the same, because you know, the mortgage rates can be moved at any point. The interest rates can be moved at any time, and they will be moved. They will be moved for the advantages not of you in your little house, but of other forces that are totally uninterested in you and are totally ruthless with respect to you.
Yeah.
And so you've put yourself, while you thought you were safe in your own little, bunkered down in your own little ship, you have actually engaged in these vast forces that are actually, you know, incredibly dangerous to you, out of which you have absolutely no control. And in the meantime, you are they're guaranteed a kind of obedience, you know, to how you get your money. You know, you can't rock the boat.
It's incredible.
Now, it's extraordinary. Like, I was working in a situation for the Vietnam Veteran Counseling Service where, you know, we all had incredibly difficulties with certain areas of the job, with certain, you know, we were asked to do more than was actually possible and do things in a way that was not a good way. And we all talked about this in our staff meetings. You know, we said, look, this is really shocking, this shouldn't be happening, whatever. But then when the meeting came, the actual meeting with the CEO, when we were I was trying to negotiate, you know, new conditions and, you know, say, no, we're not going to do this, this is not good for the veterans, this is not good, we're not going to do this, I was standing alone. All of a sudden, all those other people who had been right on board with me, right in agreement, an alliance with me, you know, without the CEO present, suddenly went completely quiet at the meeting with the CEO, and I was standing alone. And not only that, the CEO was not feeding any of this information upwards. She was not going up the ladder and saying, no, sorry, we can't, you know, we can't have these conditions. These are not good. So that's the kind of compliance, you know, the mortgage is deeply linked in with. You know, I'm not saying somebody can't have a mortgage and not have that kind of compliance. But, you know, when you know those payments are relentlessly coming out, you know, month after month.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you think twice before you rock the boat.
Sure, everyone does. And I've experienced the way people think. I've been, you know, in a corporate environment, and I've been someone who, because I don't actually have a mortgage, but I've been someone engaged in various forms of activism and, you know, doing the show that I do. And I've spoken to a lot of people, co-workers, and what I've found is virtually everyone just doesn't want, they find it interesting, but they also, the cognitive dissonance on their part is much stronger as well, as well as the lack of interest in participating and, say, you know, maybe going to a rally or something like that. There's also a mental resistance to thinking that what you're saying might be true. And again, that cognitive dissonance is stronger in them than it is in us, because they've got a lot to lose. Yeah. If they were to change the way they think, then that would also rock the boat, because it might lead them to do things
exactly. That
would rock the boat.
So they open up a little window, isn't it? And some of the information gets in.
Yeah.
And then when they begin to realize that looking deeper into this window would have very disturbing consequences, inwardly, psychologically, and in other ways, they shut the window very quickly.
And it shuts again,
And they and shut it. But 2012, looking forward into 2012, this is not going to be possible, you know, all the way through 2012, because I think the political and the economic situation are deeply linked. Do you know?
Yes.
And in some ways, they are being woven together in a very kind of delicate intertwining, you know? So say with these barrels of oil that are going to increase in price, this is going to affect, you know, our daily expenses in no uncertain way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're going to be up against it, yeah? And not only are we going to be up against that, we are going to be up against the increase in our utility bills, we are going to be up against the austerity measures of the different, their implications, what they're going to bring down to us, because we are going to begin to be struggling.
Yes.
And for some of us, we will just struggle harder and harder, like to try and make ends meet. In my own personal case, it's very interesting because I've lost my house due to being actually sucked in by this particular predatory, you know, easy loan situation. And,
You've told me about that in the past. So if you'd like to elaborate on any of that, I'm sure our listeners would be interested, but that's purely up to you.
But it's very interesting what the process that has put me through. I've had to look, and I think the more difficult people are going to find it, the more this is going to deeply intensify. And absolutely, if you look at it, it's going to intensify. And the other thing that next year is the Year of the Dragon.
Aha, Year of the Dragon,
and
right.
The Year of the Dragon, and I mean, some people obviously in your readership, I'm not strong on these things, will understand the implication of that stronger, but it is a year of power and wealth, like it benefits those who have this sort of spectacular gesture of power and command. So, you know, those people who are in these positions, you know, Obama, Hillary Clinton, the various other leaders of the nations, are going to be, in a way, increased in that year. Yeah,
there's
going to be an increase in power gesturing, if you like.
But, and I'll just add an addendum to that. I think also those of us who are involved in passionate, creative enterprises, which are to do with waking up people and doing something astonishingly good, we will also have our chance.
Yeah, I think so. So it will be an intensification year. Without a doubt, it's going to intensify in this coming year. I don't think anyone could think that that would not happen, yeah? And both the awakening, as you say, may intensify as well as one's will to do something about it. You know, I'm still going to follow up some of the economic initiatives of complementary currency and finding ways of dealing with biodynamic and organic food so that this becomes cheaper and more available. In respect to that, somebody told me today that in New Zealand, that was now being forbidden to sell, if you are growing in your garden, more food than you actually need.
Okay.
To sell it to your neighbours is now going to be a crime.
I'd like to get the info on that. If you have any links, please send them through. And if anyone listening has any info on that, I'm very interested in pursuing that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
I haven't been able to follow it up myself. It was just that somebody told me and I was going to look it up later tonight.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. And, of course, we've seen it in America. It's quite prevalent there. I'm not quite sure what the regulations in Australia are, but I know there are always council regulations. For example, there was one about a cubby house. A family in Adelaide was told by council they had to take down their cubby house because they didn't have council approval. Anyway, we're going to break. One more segment, and thanks, Carla. See you after the break.
Yep.
Welcome back to Truth News, our last Truth News broadcast for 2011. And tonight I'm with Carla Cryer and we're talking about what's going to happen and what's in store for us in 2012. And we were just talking there briefly about a story that I had discovered. We're looking at just the clampdown, you know, Carla, you were mentioning in New Zealand.
I've just looked it up. If you Google New Zealand food growing ban,
okay,
it'll come up.
Great. New Zealand food growing ban. Okay.
Yeah, it's coming up. I've just, there's local, hang on, is he?
New Zealand food growing ban. Yes, police to search homes. I've got a video here. Courtesy
local
of Max Egan.
Banned growing food without authorization. So you have to get authorization. Worldwide power grab for control of the food supply is another part that you can Google.
Okay.
Food safety bill was introduced by New Zealand. So it's been brought in under the safety, for your own safety. You can't actually buy something from someone. Yeah. This bill could seriously undermine the efforts of families to be self-sufficient by growing their own food. Shockingly, under the language of the bill, growing one's own food is considered a privilege that can be revoked by the government at any time, with non-codex complying producers the most vulnerable to enforcement action.
Now, have the actual URL? Because I'm having a bit of trouble finding that article. What's the URL you've got for that?
What's the URL? Hang on. Do we want to do this or shall we just go?
Let's just very quickly just give me the URL. Just read it off your browser.
It's www.thehealthyhomeeconomist.com.
Fine, that's good enough.
/ Yeah. Local food haven to ban growing food without authorization.
Excellent. As I mentioned earlier, I've got an article here. Family ordered to demolish cubby house will face costs of up to $1 million. A family refusing to tear down a child's cubby house put up without council permission may face costs of over $1 million.
So, it's going to be an intensification of control, isn't it? So we've got an intensification politically, we've got an intensification economically, and we've got another intensification of control.
I have another article here from South Australia. Expectant mothers who fear their babies will be seized by the authorities are hiding pregnancies to escape Families SA. Families SA is a government child protection body. Mums-to-be are having home births and planning not to register their children, and some also are preparing to flee interstate to avoid the state's child protection services, which have removed other kids from their care and placed them under the guardianship of the minister.
So that's another intensification of control, and also the vaccination, and you won't be getting your government support for your children if you don't have them vaccinated. So
yeah, there's a bunch of tax rebates that are offered to all families, and it amounts to several thousand dollars a year. And if you don't get the full vaccination schedule, the government will withhold those rebates.
So there's this, on the one hand, there's this absolute intrusion into controlling private decisions, you know, and on the other hand, then you've got, in opposition to that, this other force of Occupy, you know, Wall Street, of people then standing up to that, you know. So what's going to happen here? So 2012 is in any way going to be a very, I think, a dramatic and shocking year on many levels. I think one's best bet is to build community. Yeah,
I agree.
Build networks, community networks, and I was hoping that in 2012 I would, you know, the complementary currency network would be there. So if things get really bad, you can then actually exchange and work in the networks, whether they're internet networks, whether they're local networks, whether they're networks of kindred spirits working together. I think that's going to become increasingly important. And those networks are the things that are being developed in Occupy Wall Street, in the demonstrations. You know, they're probably not going to have an effect politically, but they are going to have an effect inwardly and socially for those people. Very deep connections, very deep friendships, very deep supports will, I think, develop in them.
Can I also say, Carla, I think that the mere fact that some groups of people have got out on the street and started making vocal presence actually has a huge psychological effect on them themselves and on the people watching. I've been quite critical of Occupy Wall Street, and I think you probably know. I've also had people on my show who've told me that the path that Occupy Wall Street is going down has been heavily influenced by a socialist and a type of groupthink, and of course viewpoints such as Ron Paul, free market concepts, and climate change skepticism have been shunned, and these pressure groups within the protest movement are trying to steer it in their direction. However, I don't think it's going to stay that way, and I think that the mere fact that people have got out on the street, and I also include on this the people who came out to protest against the carbon taxes, which was huge this year. I mean, starting in April, we had the huge protest in April. We had more protests in the middle of the year. We had more protests towards the end of the year. The carbon, anti-carbon tax movement is massive. People like Alan Jones, talk show host, coming out really strongly in support of the both the carbon tax protests and the coal seam gas protests, which then crosses the bridge between left and right, because coal seam gas is considered to be an environmental issue, but you have a purportedly right wing person like Alan Jones absolutely right in the middle of that, supporting them, breaking through the barriers and prejudices about what's going on.
So I think it would be naive to expect an immediate unification, you know, from the sort of alternative side to this intense kind of cruel political manoeuvring. You know, the opposing side is not going to immediately come into perfect unity, perfect harmony, or even perfect knowing what to do, yeah?
Yes.
But they are beginning to... I mean, I had some amazing conversations at Occupy Sydney.
Great.
And I had made connections that are still operative for me. So, you know, I think that, you know, there will be a... We're not going to go to political center stage, obviously, right away, or at all. But there is building something in a seed form that I think at one stage will be ready. And I don't know what the time frame for such a thing would be. I imagine it, you know, would be not immediate in any way. But it is there, and I think it's hopeful to acknowledge that it is there, that people are becoming independent in their thinking. They are searching for information in their own way. They are discussing it and debating it and, you know, fine-tuning their thinking in conversations with each other. And as you say, there are now crossovers that are not in neat camps or neat boxes.
I've encountered them as well. And one of my contacts in the Occupy movement, who had been very critical, is still in it, and he's still very much positive about it, which I was pleased to see. And I'll probably get him back on the show. But the guy we interviewed, Steph, and he's still going strong with it. So I'm glad to see these kind of sectarian divisions and these kind of pressure groups are not causing everything to implode. I think it's a stronger current than that. Also, you know, I just really want to point out that someone once said that history never repeats, but it often rhymes. And I think that when you look at what's going on at the moment, you hark back to the 1930s. And you tend to look at that, and what we can then predict from that would be economic collapse, World War III. Because we had economic collapse, World War II, economic collapse, World War III. Now, that may be what occurs. I certainly will not rule it out. And I think we should be prepared to accept that that is a highly likely possibility. However, we should also be prepared to realize that that may not happen.
Yes.
And it's a real danger to be constantly caught in thinking that it's going to happen and then not doing anything because you're waiting for that to happen. Don't worry about whether it's going to happen or not.
Yeah.
Get on with your life. Do what's important. Do what's meaningful for you. Stop worrying about whether the end of the world is going to happen or not.
Yeah, get on with the essential things in your life, which is, you know, community, which is friendship, which is respect for each other, which is, accepting the equality of the other. You know, live into the political movements, like, what is it, become the change you want. You know, live into that kind of political attitude of what you're trying to bring about. Live into yourself in your daily life, you know, and go ahead on that and assume. Because if it happens, it happens, and we have to go through it in the best possible way. And having these kind of networks and communal connection is going to only make it better to get through this, yeah?
Absolutely.
And if it doesn't happen, having a good, you know, network, having respect for each other, working together is going to be good as well, you know?
It's only going to be positive,
It's only going to be positive. So I think that if you can focus on that.
But what have you got to say to the people who are mortgage stressed? I mean, what can they do?
Well, look, in the end, like say in my case, when the house was gone, it was gone. I'm now living in a really spectacular house, and I'm living communally at the moment, which means that I'm doing very well financially. Nothing has actually changed.
Mm.
You know, all that has changed is some sort of strange mental thing where once I owned my house and now I don't. But through the loss of this house, and there's going to be lots of loss in the coming years for people, you know, in the 2012 for people, I can imagine with the intensification happening, you know, you're going to be thrown out of jobs. I know that the library's already cutting down their staff by almost half. You know, a lot of people are going to be affected by this in particular way. But basically, after you've lost what you've lost, your life is pretty much the same, you know. You get up in the morning, you eat, you do whatever you do, meet your friends and go to sleep again and so on, you know. You may be doing it in a different place, you may be, but basically your life doesn't change all that much.
Carla, we've just run out of time, sadly.
Yes.
It's been an absolute delight having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for letting me come on it.
And I hope that this has been of some benefit to our listeners. Over and out from 2011, Truth News Australia. See you next year.
Yeah.